Hi everyone, and welcome back to episode 9 of Stalked. I hope nobody minded the slight delay in this week's episode. Things have just been a bit mad recently. Obviously the world is a bit of a scary place at the moment, and I'm now actually in self-isolation as well, just for health reasons, but I'm still going to be bringing out episodes every week. I don't know about everybody else, but I always find podcasts a great way to like escape or focus on something different while everything else is kind of going mad. I actually got into listening to podcasts when I was in cancer treatment a few years ago, and I just find it like a great way of escapism. So hopefully everybody else will too, and I'll try and, after this kind of brief introduction, not mention anything else going on in the news, just so that you can kind of focus on something else for half an hour or an hour. And hopefully it'll be a nice distraction for anybody stuck at home, or any, in the UK we are calling them key workers, so that's people that are working in hospitals, people that are working in banks, where else, schools, supermarkets, pharmacies, anybody that is working really hard while everyone else is kind of hiding away. Hopefully this can be a little, you know, distraction on your commute. And for that reason, I actually wanted to say that the first Patreon episode, which is going up next week, I'm actually going to put for free on all streaming devices, just as a little extra present for everyone while everything is so scary and we need distractions. Okay, so this week is going to be a two-part series on cyberstalking. I must admit that I get a lot of questions about cyberstalking, and the thing with it is it's such like a new crime, especially within research areas. If you think about it, it's also always growing and adapting every single day, which is kind of daunting. Obviously, technology is ever expanding and people are finding new ways to basically, it sounds a bit dark, but basically abuse technology and get it to do what they want to do. So this week I'm going to go over what is known so far, and what might be coming in terms of future trends, and then next week I have some really interesting case studies. But the case studies are quite long, there's two of them, which I'm kind of going to go this week into the two kinds of types of cyberstalking that I think is kind of most prevalent, and these case studies are reflective of those types. But yeah, they are quite in-depth and quite long, so I thought it would be good to just split it into two rather than me rambling on for like 3 hours. And at the end of this episode, I'll also be going over the usual movie, TV, book recommendations, which I know we could all definitely use at the moment. I definitely could. I have been putting out on Instagram, if anybody has any film or TV series or book recommendations or podcast recommendations, please do let me know, because I am going to be stuck in the house for 2 weeks. And I could definitely use some distractions too. Okay, so first let's look at what cyberstalking is. It is quite an unusual category within the stalking sort of world realm, because on one hand it can be classed as a crime on its own, like done completely virtually, it never physically engaging with the victim. Often cyberstalkers can live on completely different continents and will never physically meet the victim or have ever met the victim. They can kind of fit into the five types of stalking as well, I think. I think there's two that they definitely fit into more, but I think probably if you looked you could find a case for each one. But on the other hand, cyberstalking is often a behaviour or like a tool adopted by like a typical stalker within the five types, in addition to the other things that they do. So in addition to physical following, phone calls, letters, or, you know, texting, for example. So it isn't necessarily an easy thing to pin down and say, this is what it is. I guess in basic terms, if you looked at stalking in general and said what it is, it's kind of the following or threat or constant watching or invoking fear in another person by repeated patterns of unwanted behaviour. So if you look at cyberstalking in a kind of simplistic way, then I suppose if you apply all of those things but online, so repeated patterns of unwanted behaviour or harassment online only. But in terms of it being a singular crime and not like a symptom, if you want, of another type of stalking, then the most common type of cyberstalker currently believed to be active, would fit in with the category of a resentful stalker. So we've talked about resentful stalkers before. If you are new here and you don't know what I'm talking about when I'm saying five types of stalkers, probably best to go back and listen from episode one. Episode one is quite a long one, and I go through the five types of stalkers and what they mean and what they kind of look like in terms of behaviours and things. So it's useful to know what that is, but essentially resentful stalker is somebody that has resentment or kind of wants to get revenge on somebody. They feel like they've been wronged by them. And typically this kind of cyberstalker, and so like a resentful cyberstalker, if you want, would take place when neither victim or stalker have ever met in real life, typically. And they do often live miles apart. It just obviously depends geographically, but a lot of the time, they're not even in the same country. The crime begins when the stalker perceives an insult or a personal attack from the victim. So like I say, they feel like they've been wronged in some way, and it very commonly, this kind of cyberstalking happens on things like forums or Twitter. I think Twitter is kind of a hotbed for this kind of activity. So kind of places where engaging with one another in an argumentative or kind of standoffish way is considered like normal. I guess another way of describing this cyberstalker would be as trolling, I suppose. That is, I'm kind of talking hypothetically here because I know there is some people that don't agree that trolling fits in with cyberstalking. I think trolling on a whole, no, it doesn't fit in with cyberstalking, but I don't think cyberstalking is a one-fits-all crime, just like stalking isn't. I think it's an umbrella term for a different variety of cyberstalkers, and I think trolling is probably one of them. That's just my opinion. But typically, if you don't know what a troll is, it is somebody that kind of takes, I don't know, offense at one person or another, or it could just be completely random, and it basically involves them often making like multiple fake accounts. They keep harassing the victim. They will kind of pursue the victim relentlessly via tweets, via DMs. Obviously, by having multiple accounts, they're able to kind of not swerve being blocked, but if you have five accounts and you get blocked on one, you just log on to another one. So in that way, it's kind of like an insidious way of stalking somebody or cyber stalking, because it means the victim rarely gets a break. Obviously the victim is blocking and reporting these accounts, and then another one just pops up. So you know, unfortunately, blocking and reporting accounts is easy, but so is making new accounts. I think Facebook are currently cracking down on things like this by asking for forms of ID to prove who you are. But as far as I know, I don't think Twitter have caught up to that. As I said last week, I am terrible at any social media other than Instagram. I really need to kind of catch up and learn how to use Twitter and learn how to use Snapchat, because probably a big part of my research is going to involve those, and I'm honestly, like, I think my gran probably knows more than I do. As far as I'm aware though, Twitter, you don't need to prove your identity to make accounts. You definitely don't on Instagram. I know Instagram is now owned by Facebook, but as far as I'm aware, it is just Facebook that has this kind of new technique. Probably because Facebook is quite a big like breeding ground for trolling. So in terms of like behaviours and what they will do, this type of cyberstalker troll will use the internet and use sites like Twitter and Facebook to spread rumours about the victim. They will oftentimes create fake profiles The goal, I suppose, is to infiltrate every aspect of the victim's life online, including their reputation. I suppose if looking at pros and cons, the only upside to this type of stalking is that the risk of violence is typically low. That is obviously based on what we know so far in research, which, as I mentioned at the beginning, is changing all the time. As technology grows, hopefully so will our understanding of cyberstalking and cybercrimes like trolling. Okay, so let's look at the psychology and kind of like a profile behind this kind of stalker. I think obviously the first and most obvious thing is that they do tend to be younger in kind of age ranges, typically below 50 is normal. I think the male-female split is surprisingly even. In some areas of the internet, females tend to score higher in terms of like cyber stalking, particularly trolling. It's obviously quite difficult to say, and I am just speculating, but there is probably quite a large percentage of cyberstalking characteristics within people who use online gossip websites that focus on YouTubers and influencers. I don't want to say any names because I am just speculating and I don't want to get myself in trouble, but you'll probably know which websites I mean. And I think I have seen some research that implies that people that use gossip websites like that tend to be female and they tend to be under 40 and have children. So that's kind of an interesting aspect that makes up kind of the female percentage of trolling, whereas males would account for the higher numbers in places like Facebook and Twitter. And also, unfortunately, if you're looking at things like revenge porn, which kind of fits into certain aspects of cyberstalking, but I will get into that later when we look at kind of the cyberstalking as a rejected stalker. But back to kind of characteristics and profiles, which is kind of typical only in cyberstalking. So by that I mean online only cyberstalking. I'll get into the other category later. So several studies have found that this type of individual is likely to display behaviours which can be found in the dark triad. So I have mentioned this in another episode, but essentially what the dark triad is a kind of a psychological construct that says that if you suffer from one of these three things, you're very likely to suffer from the other two. And the three things within the dark triad are narcissism, Machiavellianism, and psychopathy. So narcissism, you probably know what that is. Psychopathy, that is psychopathic behaviours. Machiavellianism, I know I've gone into this in depth in another episode, but it's essentially like kind of cunning behaviour, especially in a business sense. So yeah, they are most likely to display behaviours found within that. They are also more likely, kind of unsurprisingly in my mind, to be insecure or less confident in real life. The way in which the internet works is that it gives people kind of this degree of separation from their behaviour. So what a person says to somebody anonymously online is obviously a far cry from what they might actually say to them if they ended up being face to face. Just a quick little side note, there was in the UK recently a really great documentary on, I think it was on Channel 5, I will try and find the details, it's probably on YouTube now, but it was basically like a few like celebrities in the UK track down their like cyber stalkers, their like online trolls, and met them face to face. And really, when you see it like that, yeah, they wouldn't say the things they said online to their face. It kind of is obvious that these people can often be very insecure in real life and kind of use the internet to build up this kind of like mock bravado of confidence. And it's this kind of anonymousness, let's just say that, that gives the kind of cyberstalker the confidence that they wish they had in real life. As with most things in life, a lot of stalking, including cyberstalking, comes down to a need to control something, and it's a need to regain control of something because they're missing control of something in their life. I think a lot of things in psychology, and a lot of behaviours, for instance, OCD, eating disorders, things like that, it typically just boils down to trying to gain control over something. If you are feeling very out of control in your life, it can be very, very stress provoking. So we're constantly looking for things that we can control to give us that little bit of calmness, I guess. And I think when you look at things in psychology and you look at kind of behavioural problems and in stalking especially, it does really boil down to control. And I think a lot of things in life do generally, but I think you could definitely say that about cyberstalking. If they don't have confidence in real life, if they don't have, if they feel insecure on a day-to-day basis. If you look at things like catfishing, that's what that is exactly. They don't feel confident in their own skin, so they literally try and put like another that sounds really gross, but they literally try and put like another skin on to impersonate somebody else, to kind of live in somebody else's shoes and gain control that way when they feel like they can't in real life. I hope that makes sense. I am literally rambling today more than I've ever rambled in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. Probably because I've had 3 Starbucks coffees, but let's just ignore that. Okay, but essentially what I'm trying to say is I think a lot of cyberstalking and a lot of trolling is when the things that they say, the things that they do, they think that they have this kind of degree of separation, and I think a lot of them don't realise that their words and their actions online actually have the same effect that physically using those words would to a person. The emotional impact on the victim is very much the same as if you were shouting it to somebody on the street. And I think that perhaps they don't realise that. So I think with things like cyber stalking, the kind of the trolling aspect, I think the sort of restorative justice kind of aspect would be really good in that, to kind of sit them down with the victim and just say, you know, when you said XYZ to me, it did really make me feel like this. Because I think you can put a wall up on the internet so that you think it's almost not real. It's almost like, I think some of them think it's like a cartoon life, like it doesn't exist. It's hard to imagine another person sat on the other side of a computer screen when you're kind of living in this kind of world that you've created. And I think that maybe, you know, sitting down face to face would help them, which is why I thought that documentary was so interesting when they actually did track down the troll and sit with them and kind of explain how it made them feel. It's very easy, as it is online, with celebrities to imagine that they aren't real, that they are kind of like a, you know, like a character almost. Yeah, so I think that's interesting. I'll try and find that documentary and I'll try and link it, because it's the sort of thing that probably is on YouTube and it's definitely worth watching. But the last kind of characteristics of these cyberstalkers that would fit into kind of the troll category, they tend to actually have relatively good educational levels, and they are more likely to be employed than unemployed. Just to quickly clarify, I'm not saying all cyberstalkers are trolls, or vice versa. As I mentioned before, unfortunately, given its newness within research, cyberstalking is yet to be given the same subtypes that stalking does. And I mentioned before, I do believe it is an umbrella crime. I don't think it's one hat fits all. One cap fits all. I don't know what I'm talking about. One size fits all. Yeah, I think there are different subtypes and I think different crimes fit into the different ones. I do think trolling is probably a subtype of cyberstalking. However, within the world of resentful online cyberstalkers, there is definitely similarities between their behaviours as with trolls. The need for new research within this area is obvious, and hopefully in a few more years, we will get to know more. In terms of advice, if you have been targeted by someone online that is displaying these behaviours of cyberstalking trolls, the best way to react, unfortunately, is to not engage. I know that's frustrating, but essentially that's what they want. They feed off the retaliation, I guess. They feed off the response. So try not to engage. Try to keep copies of everything. Screenshot it or video it or download it in some way. Because it is a crime and you can go to the police and you can report them. A lot of people think that, if you click on incognito mode that your IP address is hidden. It isn't. It just hides it from your history. You aren't invisible online. You might think you are, but unless you're very, very, very clever and you know how to use, things like the dark web, you aren't invisible online and you can be traced and the police can do that. So if you are having issues with somebody that you think is trolling you, or harassing you online, keep evidence, don't respond, and go to the police. You can also, if you need more advice, go to places like Paladin or the National Stalking Helpline, which the numbers should be on my Instagram page. Alright, so let's look at cyberstalking within other types of stalkers now. I think aside from resentful stalker, the next most likely type within the five types to use cyberstalking as a method or a tool is the rejected stalker, particularly by ex-partners. So the rejected stalker, as I've mentioned before, is obviously a stalker that feels rejected in some way. An ex-partner would fit into this, an ex-spouse would fit into this, but you can also have people that have been maybe on one date and feel rejected, or asked you on a date and you've said no and feel rejected, or even family members or friends can be rejected stalkers. However, within the terms of them using cyberstalking, ex-partners tend to be the most likely to use that. So the ability to track and locate and, basically keep tabs on what your ex-partner is doing or where they are might seem like a common sort of way to think if you're kind of missing your ex. We've all heard of terms like Facebook stalking, and there's that joke that you've tried to contact them and everywhere and now you have to message them through eBay. And it's a common thing to joke about and kind of imply that you're doing if you've been broken up with or something. It's very often trivialized, but like all things, there is a limit and there's a point at which it crosses a line. So for instance, if you see that your ex-partner is in a particular bar, you've seen it on Snapchat, you've seen it on Instagram, you've seen it on Facebook, and you go there with the intention of kind of watching them, confronting them, seeing if they're on a date, seeing who they're talking to, then that's the point at which you have crossed the line. So that's kind of the point when you are displaying stalking behaviours. And this is a very good example of how cyberstalking can be used by rejected stalkers as an aid for physical following. This type of method can be kind of upped again or escalated when you look at things like ratters or GPS tracking devices. So ratters is a term that means your laptop camera or your phone camera or your TV, if you have a TV camera on some smart TVs. It basically means that has been remotely hacked so they can control they can kind of watch you through, basically. And GPS tracking devices can be put on people's smartphones. I think it tends to have to be done physically. So they might have had to have control of your phone at some point to put that on. And I might be wrong, I will try and find out some more information about this for next week, but I'm fairly certain it always comes up as a weird icon of something that you would usually have on your phone. So for instance, it might look like a calculator, but like not the normal one that would sit on your phone. They try and hide themselves within the apps, but essentially you have to download the app to use this. So there are different ways that you can scan your phone for these apps if you're worried that somebody has put one on. But if you have Snapchat or if you have Find Me Friend, they don't need to put one on because they can find you where you are using that app. So this is when the notion that cyberstalking is typically non-violent definitely in my eyes gets challenged. As I've mentioned before, rejected stalkers are pretty like, not pretty, let's say very likely in some circumstances to commit violence. They're more likely than other types of stalkers to commit violence or murder against the victim. So using cyberstalking to track them and find where they are, it should essentially change the way that we'll look at cyberstalking as kind of a non-threatening, non-violent way of stalking. It's, as I mentioned before, this is so new and it's all, you know, it's being researched constantly at the minute and it's adapting. But within kind of the world of the rejected stalker, they definitely, it's very common for them to use technology to track their victim, to find out what they're doing, to see if they're in a new relationship. So in terms of kind of risk with cyber stalking, it needs to be looked at kind of case by case. Or like I mentioned before, just don't look at it as like a one fits all crime. You need to look at it as having different branches, like you do with regular stalking, or offline stalking, we'll call it. And as I mentioned before, there is also the kind of aspect of revenge porn, which is really common now. I think it should be classed kind of as its own kind of type of cyberstalking or harassment at the very least. It is often committed by ex-partners, or typically committed by ex-partners, and it is very often done kind of with the intention of bribing them back into the relationship. It's almost like a sort of punishment. You know, if you go back out with me, I'll delete the photos. That's whenever I've seen like research on things like that, that seems to be the motivation. So it kind of comes from a place, rather than like resentment or revenge, it almost seems to come from a place of like, desperation, I think, when it's like an ex-partner, which is really unfortunate. It's just not a good place to be in for either person. It is a crime now, and I think the police do try and prosecute, but I do think it's really hard to find out where things have been uploaded from. But I guess what I'm trying to say is essentially cyberstalking is a hugely varied, very intricate crime, very much in its infancy in terms of research, and so much more research is needed in seeing how things like cyberstalking kind of plays into the five types of stalkers, and also how it kind of contributes to, like things like risk assessments of violence. But hopefully in a few years we'll be much better able to kind of understand this very new crime. There are also things that kind of sit maybe on the outskirts of cyberstalking, but they can blend in. So domestic violence, which as I've mentioned before, it does tend to play into rejected stalkers. It's not uncommon for a victim of domestic violence to leave their partner and then be stalked. And then there's also things like coercive control. So coercive control is a form of domestic violence. It is now a crime in the UK, definitely. I'm not sure about America. But it's basically like mental abuse, controlling the person, taking their credit cards, for instance, limiting time they can see friends. It's all done with manipulation. It's very rare that that person gets violent. It makes it really hard to spot and really hard to prove. If you are in the UK or if you're in America and you have access to UK TV, there is an amazing storyline at the minute on Coronation Street about coercive control. between like two characters, Jeff and Yasmin, and me and my husband are loving watching it, honestly, because it's so scary to watch how easy it is to kind of get this person into this place where they're so vulnerable and isolated, and that's kind of the main thing, the isolation that like comes with coercive control. It is basically getting you to be in a position where you depend on that person so much that they kind of know that you can't leave them. And like I mentioned before, things come down to control. It's a way of controlling. If you're quite an insecure person, you don't want your partner to leave you. Coercive control is a way of kind of trying to assure yourself that they won't. So I will try and I'll try and find out if you can watch it in America. Whatever you do, don't try and watch Coronation Street from the beginning. I've heard that this has happened before, where somebody in America was like, oh, what's a good English TV series? And they've been told Coronation Street. It has been running for like 50 years, I think. There are literally thousands and thousands and thousands of episodes and series. So don't try and watch it from the beginning. The best thing to do is to try and maybe catch up on like the last month or so, because you'll just be watching it for the rest of your life. But I'll try and find out if you can watch that in America. And if you're in the UK and you want to see it, it should just be on the ITV Player Hub, which is free. But yeah, so I think cyberstalking will obviously kind of play into things like domestic violence and coercive control, because everybody uses their phones, everybody uses computers, and you know, it's easy to see where somebody's been. You can track what they've looked at and things. So I definitely think the edges blend definitely on there. And then there is malicious communications, which has only really recently been classed as a crime in the UK in the last, I want to say, year or so. And it's basically a behaviour classed as when somebody sends a letter or any other form of communication, including text message, email, Facebook message, for example, that is indecent or grossly offensive, threatening, or contains information which is false or believed to be false. The purpose for sending it is to cause distress or anxiety to the person it is sent to. That is like kind of the official kind of explanation of malicious communications. So hounding somebody over text, for example. Letters tends not to be that common now. Email definitely is. Leaving voicemails would be classed as malicious communications. So it's kind of, I think, definitely plays into cyberstalking in a way. If the cyberstalker is purely contacting the person via email or via text message or via Instagram message or Facebook message, then if the victim, you know, like I mentioned before, keeps track of it and saves it, the person can be prosecuted. And I think at the minute in the UK, the maximum sentence would be 5 years in prison if you were proved guilty of malicious communications. Yeah, so there's lots of, as you can see, there's lots of different areas that cyberstalking might play into, especially within the five types of stalkers I've mentioned before. Haven't even kind of got into kind of, you know, erotomaniacs, who undoubtedly use the internet now to look up if they are stalking a celebrity. I'm sure they use things like that. And then you've got predatory stalker, who I think it would be really interesting to look at how they use the internet, because I haven't really talked about the predatory stalker too much because it is the rarest, but predatory stalkers, personally, I think are the scariest, because they typically aren't seen by the victim until they attack the victim, and most of the time predatory stalkers are stalking with the sole purpose of trying to commit some kind of sexual violence, but they gather information, and that's kind of the stalking aspect of it. They gather like where the person's going to be, when they're on their own, what time they leave the house. And I wonder how much given how much people use their phones and Facebook now, I wonder how much can be done online now rather than physical following. So again, there's just so many different avenues that cyberstalking could go down to at the minute that we just haven't seen yet and hasn't been kind of presented yet, because the research is still either being done currently or it hasn't been done yet. And it's kind of like we're trying to catch up with ourselves on cyberstalking. But just as we think we've caught up, somebody releases something new on a phone. Or, like, for instance, the first time I saw the advert for the new camera portal, my first thought was, I wonder if somebody can hack into that. And I know that's because I'm very paranoid because of the research I do. But every time something is released like portal, it has the potential to be used in a, you know, not very positive way by a stalker. So yeah, I've kind of tried to explain as much as I can about cyberstalking. What I'm basically saying is it's so new, it's so huge and vast in terms of the ways that it could be used by different stalkers, or the kind of hats that it could fit onto in other kind of things like domestic violence. But yeah, so next week I'm going to have two cases. One of them is going to be on kind of a online troll only, so like a resentful cyberstalker. And the other one is going to be kind of the revenge porn rejected stalker, kind of the rejected stalker that uses cyberstalking as kind of a tool in their kit of stalking, if you like. So let's look at the movie recommendations. The first movie I wanted to mention is the 2015 film Ratter, starring Ashley Benson, who is from Pretty Little Lies, I think. She is a college student living alone whose phone and laptop cameras have been ratted, which, as I mentioned before, means remotely hacked. It's definitely not the most accurate film in terms of like behaviours of cyberstalkers. Lots of it is obviously done for dramatic effect because it is a film, but it definitely kept me like on the edge of my seat. I was very entertained by it, and there were some interesting parts which I did think, you know, that's a good example of a stalking behaviour. So for instance, I think the stalker posts like something really weird, like a razor, and it's the same brand of razor that she uses at home, like a leg razor. And it's just that sort of unsettling thing that is often done by like maybe a predatory stalker or an intimacy seeking stalker. So in terms of that, yeah, I would definitely give that one a watch. The next is a 2006 indie movie, which is called Alone With Her. I think it's relatively quite hard to find now. I watched it years ago. It's the sort of thing that you might find, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but on something like Sidereel or kind of that kind of online website. It might be on YouTube for free, or you might find it on DVD. But it kind of documents a cyberstalker. I mean, imagine a cyberstalker in the early 2000s. So it was really shocking to see. He uses like kind of hidden cameras around a house to watch his victim. I don't think he uses a phone camera, because I think in 2006 it would have been like a BlackBerry or something, and they had the worst cameras ever. But he uses all of these cameras to gather information, and then he meets her in real life and he kind of pretends to like the same thing. So he's using information that he's gathered via stalking to manipulate his victim into liking him. It was a really good film, really, really good. And I think I can't remember who played him. I think because it's an indie film, I think the actors were kind of unknowns, but he was a really great portrayal of a stalker. So I will try and find that and try and put up on Instagram where you can watch it. Okay, the next one is kind of a joke mention. There is actually a film called Cyberstalker, which stars the OC's Misha Barton. And it was kind of one of the first films she was in, I think, when she came back from not being in anything for a really long time. I've got to be honest, it's terrible. It's really bad. But if you enjoy watching, like, shit movies, go and watch it, because it's really funny to watch. It's the sort of film that's like Sharknado, or my personal favourite is Sharks in Venice with, it's the least known Baldwin, what's his name? Stephen Baldwin, I think. But yeah, it's that kind of budget movie, but it's hilarious to watch. And I guess it is about a cyberstalker. But I will try and find if you can watch that. It's probably on something like somewhere where there's Lifetime movies. I'll have to try and find it. The last recommendation today is actually a book, and it's like a fiction book. So I read this last year. I didn't read it. I listened to it. I got it on Audible. I do loads of walking and stuff, so I always get Audible, because it just means you can kind of listen to lots of books while not having to read. I know some people think it's lazy. I do love it, though. So this was like a recommended one for me, because I love thrillers, and it is called The Closer I Get, and it's by Paul Burston. It was a brilliant example of cyberstalking in kind of the resentful category. It highlights how cyberstalking can interchange with trolling, and how Twitter can actually be like addictive for some people. It obviously has parts that are kind of for dramatic purposes, so it isn't wholly accurate, but I do remember being really impressed at how they portrayed the stalker and how they kind of portrayed the impact on the victim, and I was really hooked listening to it. I couldn't wait to see what happened next. So basically follows an author in London who is cyberstalked and trolled by an obsessive fan. I would definitely recommend it. I will put the name and everything up on the Instagram page. So that is all for this week. I will be back next week with part two with the case studies, and remember to look out for the extra Patreon episode that you will all get for free as like a little trial and a little present, and that will come up next week, and that is going to be all about the psychology behind narcissism, so hopefully it will be interesting. And thanks for listening, and I hope everybody stays safe.